Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
And we have a good friend who runs this company called Pike Strike. And so they're all northern pike. Same family anyway. They look identical to our Canadian pike. And if you trace a line across to Sweden from Canada, you'll see there's probably some natural, but they're probably the same species. But they're in the Baltic Sea, and with a little bit of salt in their livelihood, these are fast. They fight hard, and they're crazy cool. But that whole place was epic for, and most of them fly fish up there.
That was James McBeth from Pike Strike Camp. Pike, kayaks, and more kayaks today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. I wanted to highlight one great past episode from this podcast, episode 177 with Roger Fletcher. If you're interested in boats and specifically drift boats, Roger breaks down the history of drift boats there, and it's a really awesome episode. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that, episode 177. James McBeth from Jackson Kayak walks us through the process of finding the perfect kayak for your next fishing trip. We find out why you might go with a pedal versus a paddle, what types of storage you should be thinking about, and the new kayak that is perfect if you aren't into kayaks. And this kayak is also large enough that you could put a couple of lawn chairs and maybe even a cot and take a nap out there. Get ready for a deep dive into the leading kayak company on the planet. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsor. Koffler Boats specializes in custom ordered aluminum boats and uses the best materials, components, and accessories available to meet all of your fishing and boating needs. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Koffler to check out the lineup right now. That's Koffler, KOFFLER, wetflyswing.com/Koffler to check out the lineup and connect with Joe. So, without further ado, here is James McBeth from jacksonkayak.com. How's it going, James?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Yeah, this is great to have you on here. We connected a while back, and the kayak has been out there. It's funny how these things go. You know, I mean, I've used kayaks over the years, and I'm not sure if it seems like a hot topic to you, but it seems like it is to me right now. We're going to dig into a little bit on kayaks, maybe how to choose a kayak. But before we get into that, I'm not sure how much fly fishing or fishing you've done. Can you talk about how you first, if you have done fly fishing, how'd you first get into it?
Well, that's a really old story. My mother is a Newfoundland born baby. She's been from a small town called Buchans, Newfoundland. And every summer we would go to Newfoundland, and I had this Uncle Bill. And Uncle Bill, he didn't technically fly fish, but he made his own flies out of all sorts of stuff. And he had a big, long, literally a stick in the woods. He'd take a line and he'd create this. Very much like the Japanese, I can't remember what they're called, where it's just a line, a stick, and
a tenkara,
exactly like that. And he had a bear hook, and he would use fur that he'd find on trees, deer fur mostly, and caribou, and he would use that to catch fish. And that's kind of a cool story, because he wouldn't consider himself a fly fisherman. But when I was probably 4 or 5, I started fly fishing. The next summer, or a couple summers after that, I brought my own fly rod up. And now he was right near the Exploits River in Newfoundland. So I was on an Atlantic salmon when I was 7, I'd say. And lots of trout, obviously, brookies there and everything. So I started young. I swing both ways, but I fly fish and traditional fish and deep sea fish. I do it all. which I don't do.
That's cool. Yeah. So, and I Atlantic salmon, this is great because that's a topic. We probably won't dig in fully into that today, but, you know, maybe we can leave that for another conversation. But do you still do some Atlantic salmon fishing? Is that something you still go for?
So I'm in Ottawa, so I'm about probably a 5-hour drive from the part of the St. Lawrence Seaway that has incredible salmon fishing. So you can get some salmon runs going there, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. And I do head up every 2 years. We've got Lake Ontario that's got some salmon too, so I'll do that. And my dad just happens to be from BC, so I'll go out to BC. And my last trip out to BC, I went to Campbell River, and there's some salmon to be had there.
Well, you know, Jackson Kayak is a big name out there in the kayak space, and I mean, it looks like you guys kind of cover it all. I mean, you've got whitewater fishing, you name it. I want to talk about, you know, just getting into this. Well, before we jump into the like choosing a kayak, talk about how you came to be working with Jackson.
It's a story that started in the 90s. I had a website called areyouchicken.com, and it attracted the attention of a lot of the extreme athletes out there, both whitewater. I focus mostly on whitewater, mountain biking, and extreme skiing. And it was that time I met Eric Jackson. And Eric was working for a company called Wavesport at the time, and he was designing boats for them. And he decided to splinter off because that manufacturer decided not to do a kid's boat. And he had this Dane Jackson, who was a preemie baby, and so he started Jackson Kayak literally to create a kid's boat. And the next year they were the number one manufacturer in the world. So, for whitewater boats, I came on maybe 2 years after that when, he's, you know, as a president and owner, he was doing everything at the time, but as he grew, he kind of ran out of space, and I had just quit my job in Montreal, building a web firm. And he brought me into to direct marketing, probably 2003, 2004.
Okay. So yeah, you're going on. Like 20 years, coming up on 20 years. And so you've been doing the marketing and that side of it the whole time?
Yeah. I mean, I became the director of marketing years after that, but mostly filling in the gaps, like, you know, building websites, doing e-commerce and setting up, you know, it's a crazy generation. That whole span, if you think about it, went through a whole bunch of marketing changes, you know, from web, which was very new back then, to, and now I'm making myself sound old. So we had web and then social media and, you know, blogging and you name it. That was the whole era right there. So, you know, anytime we hit that era, I made sure he was on the cutting edge of it. So
that's right. Yeah. And I know a little bit of that history there. I've come into the online space a little bit later, but I know, I mean, podcasting, for example, I mean, it literally started in like 04, right? The guy, the podfather, started, you know, the first podcast, in like 04. And I mean, it's amazing to think about that. The fact that, you know, literally we're coming up on 20 years because things are booming so much with podcasting now, but, no, this is good. So you guys have a good resource. You have a bunch of great boats you've been leading out there. And and that's why I wanted to dig in with you to help, you know, if somebody's listening now that maybe hasn't done much kayak fishing or maybe has done a little bit but doesn't know what to get for a boat, I'm hoping we can walk them through the steps. Is there, you know, I know your site's loaded. Where would somebody start? If they come to you and they're like, okay, I'm tired of using my boat, whatever it is, and I want to kayak for fishing, what do you tell them?
Well, I mean, there's so many different boats out there right now. You know, the end of the day, it's about how you fish and how comfortable you need to be on a kayak. You know, we have kayaks that are literally barges, and not just ours. You know, you have kayaks you can literally walk off a deck, you know, or a dock onto, and it won't move. They're hard to paddle. Some of them are pedal driven, so they're, you know, they get out there fast enough for sure. Then there's others that are more like a kayak, you know, the traditional sense where you're a little bit more tippy, but you can go a lot faster. You can go a lot farther. You can go to places where you can explore a little bit more, get to waterways that most boats can't get to. Then you're taking, you know, you're evolving a little bit. But when you're just starting out, everybody's going to have their opinion. But my best shot at it, in my opinion, is try a whole bunch. You know, there's the good news is many dealers for all manufacturers have really great demo days, and they have great local staff that are running tournaments and stuff like that. Just show up at a local event, odds are you'd be able to get into a kayak and try it yourself. But I'd say the number one rule is don't let anybody tell you what boat to get.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
You know, yeah. And as you kind of evolve, you know, one of my current theories is that we have a lot of anglers getting into kayaks for through different types of necessity, whether it's the zombie apocalypse and they're cutting costs down and they can't get their big boats out, or they're tired of shore fishing, or their buddy tried it. You know, they're getting into kayak fishing even before the apocalypse. We saw a growth in our industry, in the kayak fishing industry, of about 600-700% a year. So a lot of that has to do with the economics, convenience. You know, there's so many different factors. And as we see people getting into kayak fishing as anglers, we're finding a lot more, you know, folks out there fishing from a kayak versus kayaking. So now we're seeing, you know, people who have been kayak fishing for, you know, 4 or 5 years becoming kayakers. So then their choices are different in regards to what boats they want. You know, they want to try, they don't want to just do their home lake or their cottage lake. They now want to go, okay, I'm going to do this waterway. So you need a boat with a little bit better turning capabilities and a little smaller, a little less stable, but you know, they want to explore those waters. And some people are going inshore for redfish. Some people are going offshore for bigger fish. And every one of those environments needs different equipment, including kayaks. So, once you're in, then you're stuck. It's an addictive thing and you can get to different places.
That's it. A couple of things come to my mind as far as types of fishing. I think of, you know, I mean, there's still water fishing. You know, I've done a lot of that. And then there's also the ocean. You know, that's kind of an interesting thing. Maybe it would be helpful to dig into one of these just so we can talk about some of the boats you guys have. And I know there's other companies out there, but I think looking at what you guys have will give you an idea of the design for somebody new. So let's take it. Maybe let's first start with the ocean type of boat. You know, if somebody was going to go out, you know, somewhere in the ocean or, you know, where there's tidal influence, what are they looking at? What do they need to be thinking about?
Yeah, well, going back to your early statement real fast is the other thing is a lot of the local dealers will know local waters. And a lot of your fishing habits and what you're looking fishing for and the needs you're going to have as a kayak angler are going to be answered by those great dealers. So they'll have the answers for you. There's always a kid on the floor that's going to know the right answer, get you in the right boat.
How do you find a good dealer? I mean, I know, like, what would you say? Somebody has no idea where to start. I mean, could they just go to like a you know, like a Dick's Sporting Goods, or where do they go? How do they find the right people?
I'd tend to lean towards the specialty shop. You know, most of the medium to small size dealers are fishermen themselves. You know, you'll have some of the folks at Cabela's that are really good at picking out the right lures and everything, but they're not going to get right down to, you know, the local fisheries, I don't think. And you know them, they're the ones that sell bait at the same time. You know, if you're new to the area, and that's what I do when I travel, you know, I went to Maine last year or 2 years ago, and I walked into Old Orchard's bait shop, and they knew how to put me on fish. They knew where I should go, what I should use, and all that kind of stuff. So I think the more grassroots you get in regards to a dealer, the more accurate information you're going to get. You're not just going to get that guy trying to sell you some plastic.
Yeah. So just look for like a, even just Google search kayaks or fishing kayaks or something like that and just see what pops up. And
yeah, you know, on our website, we have a find a dealer app, and it's pretty easy. And most of our dealers are fairly approachable, you know, if not all. We've got some really big ones, but they tend to be more big in the sense they've got like 4 shops across the state kind of big versus big box. So we tend to lean strongly towards specialty for so many reasons, mostly because we want to make sure people are getting into the right boats, actually. So.
Exactly. It's kind of like similar to a fly shop. And I'm sure there's some fly shops that have kayaks as well, because that's the great thing about a fly shop is you get the really customized service, right?
Yeah. So for ocean, to get back to your question, for ocean, there's a bunch of stuff at play here. You know, it's not an easy playground, depending, of course, where you're fishing. If you're fishing inshore, then you tend to have less wind. It does get windy, but you're not as affected. It'll blow the current to a point where you can get super shallow super fast. So with your inshore, you're kind of looking for a boat that has a very low kind of a low paddling level, if you will. You want to be about 4 or 5 inches underwater. You know, a lot of the pedal drives won't work in there. Ours will. It goes up to 4 inches. So, you're generally looking for a boat that can ride really shallow. If you're, you know, inshore, you're usually after redfish and that kind of fish, some trout. Then you're sight fishing, which means you probably want a boat that you can stand up on. So you want to have pretty good stability, which kind of goes hand in hand. The wider the boat is, the lower, the less it will sink. So kind of works out. There's a few boats like that, like our U-Pick is a really good one. We have a boat called the Liska. That's a really good one. It's a little bit wider and a little bit shallower, easier to get around while you're inland. And then when you go offshore, then there's a whole another plethora of challenges. Your first challenges is actually going offshore. A lot of experience offshore, and you spend a lot of your time sweating the idea of going in and out of the break. So, you know, if you're lucky and you got a sheltered cove that you can kind of go out away from the rollers, that's great. But a lot of times in straight break, you got to bring your boat into water, time it so you're rushing through that first break that's hitting the ground. Just you're not in a tiny little surfboard. You're in a, you know, usually a 13, 14 foot boat that's laden down with all your gear, because the more you pay for your boat, the more you pay for your gear, is my philosophy, by the way. You tend to load a boat full of gear for offshore. You've got jigging rods, you've got, you know, popper rods, you probably have 5 or 6 fishing rods, and then you got the heavy lead, you know, weighted gear that you're using to get down deep, and you know, you're challenged for sure. So going offshore is mostly having a boat that's convenient through the break. And then once you're out into the open seas, then you're looking at things like current. So you want to have good tracking. That's usually involves having a longer boat and a little bit more narrow. You're not standing offshore, so not a big deal. So you want a longer tracking boat. And there's a lot of good ones out there. We have a boat we're bringing back called the Kraken. That was probably arguably one of the best boats ever designed for offshore. Had really great nose, so you can surf it actually in on it. And gets out there fast and stays out there, stays in the current. Sometimes you're trying to keep up and with a 5-6 knot current, so you gotta have a boat that keeps you in place.
Gotcha. So the crack. So you mentioned the crack is a good one, and the Liska is also would be a decent one for. And is there a way on your site to look up to take a look at these? What would be the easiest way? Is there a search function or?
Yeah, we do. We have, if you click on our fishing products page, the general fishing page, you'll show a nice little selection of boats, and we do describe in each category for each boat what it's good for, you know, what kind of waterways. For ocean, the Kraken is going to be in, we call it an OG boat. It's going to be kind of we do limited runs every year. Most of the offshore paddlers are peddlers, actually. So they do, they don't ask for money. They actually pedal. They're out there with pedal drives, mostly because they could be hands-free to troll and hands-free to jig. A lot of times you imagine trying to stay in one spot and jig over a rock outcropping and paddling at the same time. So it's become a really hot item, the pedal drive out there. We've got something called a Kusa FD, which is a really great pedal drive. Our drive actually has another little bit of a capability that helps out in the ocean. We have kind of a dagger board propeller. So the propeller's on the end of a dagger board. And when you lower it right down, you actually have a dagger board that's 2 feet underwater. And you can't flip that boat. You'll fall out before you flip. So that's super helpful too.
That's the Kusa. Yeah, I see that the FD. So on the pedal thing, why would you not want, it seems like the pedal would be just a great thing to have. When would you not want to have a pedal for fishing?
Well, it's too bad we're doing a podcast interview because I paddle. I don't like to pedal. In fact, I did the offshore world championships at Los Buzos 2 years ago, and I was the only one paddling. Mostly because you can't, on a radio show, you can't see the pipes I have.
yeah.
But you just have to take my word for it. Yeah. It's a preference thing, and I'll go back to what boat you want to choose. It really is a preference thing. I was a whitewater kayaker all my life, and the idea of not doing anything with my hands is weird.
Right.
You know, so it's a preference thing. I do have a little bit of pedal envy every once in a while, you know, especially the strong winds and stuff like that when I'm using the smallest muscles. Well, okay, the medium-sized muscles in my body. And, you know, legs are the largest muscle in your body, you know. And so you're getting definite advantage with pedal drive offshore. That's for sure.
Offshore, and is it as? I mean, I would think that the paddle you maybe have a little more power or not. Or are they about?
That's a depend thing. So I outpowered most of the boats with my paddling, not so much because of my strength, most because of the boat. You know, the pedal drives are those big wide barges right now on the ocean. That is going to change. Someone's going to come out with a boat that's both a pedal drive and something that's a little bit more ocean worthy. Right now, there's not a lot of offering for that. That's going to be the big evolution in offshore pedal drive boats. There's that one boat that's going to come out that's going to not be a barge. Honestly, I was in the Kraken out there in Panama, and you know, one stroke I was able. You know, these guys were pedaling pretty hard to keep up with me. And that just has to do with a boat that's, you know, almost 10 inches narrower and longer and sleeker. And, you know, there's other boats called, that are fiberglass that are even sleeker than the boat I was in. Those things rocket.
Yeah. You know? Is that the material? What is the material your kayaks are made out of? Are they different materials?
We're rotomolded plastic. Most manufacturers in kayak fishing use rotomolded plastics. There's some thermoformed boats, but they tend to be the lower end boats. They're lighter and everything, but they tend to break.
Gotcha.
Kayak anglers are not friendly to their craft.
No.
No.
No, it's that's not. Right.
We drop a lot of crap onto our boats and stand. We fall down, you know. It's a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that gives a little snippet in a couple of models ocean. Let's take it now to the say the lake. I mean, I'd imagine you have some people fishing these for still water. Is that the case? And what are we looking at? How would the boat be different there?
There's a couple of differences. One, you're not going to get as much current as the ocean. Two, you're not going to be exposed as much, so you don't need to get back home. You know, part of the challenge being in the ocean is getting home.
Yeah.
You know, you're cruising around, you got winds, you got current taking everywhere. You look up, the shoreline looks the same distance it always did. Okay, you look at your little Raymarine. So we do a lot of electronics out in the ocean as well we do in shore, but we have our Raymarine fish finders and stuff like that. So. But, you know, you look at your Raymarine, you're like, oh, crap, I'm 50 miles from shore. And it's, you know, 7:15 at night because you've got fish brain and you've been fishing the whole time. And lakes are a little bit different. You know, you tend to have less current. Some of the bigger ones a lot of the tournaments these days in kayak fishing are fishing some of the big classic bass fishing lakes. So they get kind of big. You know, Lake Champlain might as well be an ocean, you know. So there's some big lakes out there. So you will use some of these bigger boats and pedal-driven boats to conquer those lakes for sure. I'm a big fan of getting into the little bays myself. You know, it's a bit of a pain getting across the lake, you know, if you have to. But if you know, the good thing about kayaks is you don't need to put in at the put-in. you can, you know, find some, you know, some neighbor or, you know, a bridge. Bridges are my favorite. You know, you go to where a bridge goes across a river that goes into the lake, and you just park your car on the side of the bridge and drag your boat over. You don't need a launch. So you can tend to get to most parts of these big lakes quite easily. And then once I'm on there, I'm a big fan of just getting into those big weedy bays. You know, I'm a big pike and musky fan, so tend to slinker into those bays with these kayaks. So their boats are a little bit, the big lakes, the boats are the same as the ocean boats, obviously set up differently. As the lakes get smaller or as your targeted destinations, like if you're just doing, you know, shoreline and you're just doing bays, then you don't need a big long boat. Then you can get into something a little bit smaller. And those are the same boats that kind of cross over to smaller lakes and ponds and then into rivers. So then, you know, kind of naturally you're going from bigger, more stable boats to smaller boats, not necessarily less stable. Some of the smaller boats out there for kayak fishing, like the, you know, the Liska and a few others. We have a new boat called the Stax that's even shorter, and it, you know, you can stand on it. Most of these boats are standable. So, and you'd want to once you get into the lily pads for sure.
Gotcha. So there, so most of the boats you guys have for fishing, they have a kind of a deck you could stand up pretty easy.
Yep. That's been a thing. It was kind of brought in by Jackson back in the day, having a truly standable boat. We did a high low seating system and a big wide, stable platform, with our first entry, the Kusa, back in the day. And it's kind of a weird thing. You know, if you've never seen a guy stand in a kayak back then, nobody ever saw people standing in kayaks, and all of a sudden everybody was standing in a kayak. So, that became a pretty big buying checkbox for sure.
Yeah, that's right. And, so that's one of the nice things. And I guess, and you mentioned, so, if you did have, say, a smaller lake type of boat, what would be one name you'd throw out there that you guys have?
Anywhere from the Liska to, the Yupik. The Liska is my favorite right now. The Yupik is the same hull. And it's going to have more storage next year. So it's going to be my new favorite next year, probably. But, the Yupik has, so it's named after the Alaskan tribe that literally invented the word kayak, or I don't know how it was pronounced back then, but, this boat is an exploration boat. So I do most of the stuff I do right now is exploration. So, the Yupik's a little bit longer, pretty, really stable, and it's got a really good cutting hull, but it's got a wide open deck, like literally nothing on it, and a whole bunch of tie down points. So, I take my NRS dry bags and I do multi-days down whitewater in the thing. So it's short enough for whitewater and small lakes. And I carry into inshore for redfish whenever I can. So that's probably our most diverse boat right there.
That's, I was just going to say, is that something you could go into a little bit of ocean if you had to?
Yeah, you could. The hull, so we have a gentleman, and I will call him that because he's 6'8" or 6'4". He's really super strong. Tony Lee is our primary designer for our hulls. He's a surfer. He's been shaping boats for performance for decades. And now I make him sound old. He's going to punch me. Damn it. So he's been shaping hulls, and we've evolved our hulls as we were kind of getting used to the kayak fishing challenges out there over the years. And I'd say the Yupik is probably our best designed hull for that kind of boat, you know, for a boat that's wide enough to stand in. That's a challenge, right? You, as a designer, you got to try to figure out, you know, the fine line between getting across the lake in good time and standing and storing stuff. And we throw a lot at the poor boy. So I think he's answered really well with this boat.
And that's the cool thing about the Yupik or the Yupik, or I guess, how do you pronounce that again? Is it Yupik?
We pronounce that because it's, you know, Yupik.
Yupik.
It's Yupik, I think. I think it is Yupik, actually.
Yeah, Yupik, that's right. And it's
there's an accent in there, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty open. So the one disadvantage with that might be if you did have a lot of gear, or I guess that's another thing. You could be going on a multi-day trip. So where would you put? I guess, like you said, you could just strap your dry bag on. That'd be fine.
Yeah, so for rods and tackle storage, everybody's got boxes. So it used to be a lot of us used old milk crates. And, you know, we'd take a milk crate and we'd strap three rod holders on it and we just drop our gear into it, you know. And, you know, as a side point, this is why fly fishing is so great. you have the super light rod, the super light tiny little box, and that's it. You know, you got a couple of clippers hanging off you here and there, but that's it, you know. And but, you know, when you're in a bass fishing tournament, if you're a bass angler, you want to have a top water, you want a deep water jig, you want to have something for in front of the weeds, something, you know, in the weeds, you know, nobody wants to set up. So they just bring a rod each, and then with the accompanying tackle for each style of fishing. It's a crazy amount of gear they put in. But that, yeah, so again, right behind, and if you're looking at the photo on the website, right behind the seat in the Yupik is a big open space. It's a flat space. That's where we put our boxes there. And there's a whole bunch of different tackle storage systems available to kayak anglers that kind of work with those. You'll see the tracks on both sides that you can tie down rod holders from Yak Attack. And, you know, there's just so many different accessories that you can set your boat up with. And if you Google kayak fishing, lots of accessories or something like that, and click on images, you'll see some incredible setups on these kayaks. They're like every square inch of space with a fish rod, rod holder, mount, camera gear, you name it, got it.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Koffler Boats specialize in custom ordered aluminum boats and uses the best materials, components, and accessories available to meet all of your fishing and boating needs. The Jet Drifter, a perfect power boat for shallow water rivers or lakes, will perform with as little as a 35 horsepower prop engine, but the whole design will also accept larger engines. In addition, the Jet Drifter is also designed to be rowed. The Jet Drifter can be custom built in 14 foot through 18 foot lengths. And I've been rowing Koffler drift boats for most of my life. I remember going down the river in my dad's Koffler boat when I was a kid. And since, I have transitioned into the 17 by 54 drift boat, perfect for packing a ton of gear and still staying nimble. If you need a bulletproof boat that can literally sit outside all year long when not in use and take a beating, Koffler has the boat for you. Whether a Jet Drifter, drift boat, Rocky Mountain trout boat, or sled, Koffler has you covered. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Koffler to connect with Joe and the family today. That's Koffler, K-O-F-F-L-E-R, right now. wetflyswing.com/Koffler. You support our podcast by clicking over through that link to connect with Joe. Please let Joe know you heard of the ad through the podcast when you connect, and check back with me to celebrate if you end up making a purchase.
Now let's get back to the rest of the show. Talk about some of those accessories. You mentioned some of them. What are the big ones that people add? So you buy, and this, the U-Pick or the Yup-Pick, I mean, man, for $1,300, I mean, that sounds like a pretty good deal, right? You get this boat, but it probably doesn't come with a lot of the extras. What are some things you might add to that?
So you'll notice there's tracks all around that boat on the photos that you see, especially the top shots. And those are called gear tracks. There's a couple of companies, Ram and Yak Attack, who kind of spearheaded this incredible accessorizability to kayaks over the years. There's a lot of mad scientists involved in inventing crap like that can go under your boat, from, like I said, holding a rod. They actually have fly fishing rods, rod holders that are specific that can handle the setup that you have. You've probably seen those in regular boats. They have expanded to big boats, but a lot of these accessories came from the kayak fishing world. You know, like everything that evolves, like the enginet when it was evolving, so many different things were invented, you know, just because of the sheer amount of money being spent on the internet. But it's the same thing with kayak fishing. That growth actually spurned an incredible growth into accessories. So Yak Attack is the one I use the most. I do have a lot of Ram stuff, and they both have incredible systems that actually tie down to those tracks, and they're movable. You know, you loosen it a little bit, move it up, and close it off again, and you can set your boat up no matter what you want. When I go musky fishing, I'll give you a direct example. You know, so when I go musky fishing, I actually that's a perfect example of when I swing both ways. I like those big chunky musky flies. I'm starting to tie them myself. They really are ugly, but I actually catch fish. The funnest thing I've ever done is catch a fish on my first fly. So it's kind of cool. So I have, you know, a rod holder that keeps my fly rod kind of pointing backwards off to the side, so it's out of the way from my paddling. And then I have two, what I call Omega rods from Yak Attack, that sit right next to me with my big, heavy, you know, traditional musky rods, you know, with those big old baits. And I have a big box behind me tied down with, Yak Attack has got a big black box that they've now taken the milk crate and kind of fed it some crack, and they turned it into like some crazy cool, like they got pockets and little things holes that are drilled so you can put your pliers down in, because you kind of need pliers for musky fishing. Yep. And there's all these things that you know, they're now really convenient right around you. And that's the cool thing, you know, when you set up your kayak, you're setting it up custom to yourself, you know, with these accessories. And then they have, you know, in the modern digital age, they have all these Bluetooth enabled fish finders. Well, every fish finder's got a different transducer size, and every finder company's got a different size of screen and all that kind of stuff. So you got to have something to hold that onto your kayak. So then you've got these accessories that again go to the gear track, and you can put these terminals wherever you want them. And then you got your camera mounts, and everybody's got their phone. So in the tournament world, we do the catch, photo, and release. We take pictures of our fish and release them, right? So from the measuring board, so you have to use your phone to take a picture. So that's got to be convenient. They even have these little twirly stringer things that attach to your phone, so you don't drop it in the drink. It never ends.
What about an anchor?
Yeah, for sure. So we got a company that's got a local connection here up in Canada, Tightline Anchors, who have a really lightweight anchor that, you know, a lot of traditional anchors are super heavy. So we got some of those. And we got, again, Yak Attack has created what they call an anchor trolley, which is a kind of a line system that allows the kayak angler to drop down an weigh anchor and bring it up again, that kind of thing. So we use that a lot. I'm a traditionalist, if you will. I like most manual stuff. I don't. So I have my anchor is basically a pole. Again, Yak Attack, I mention them a lot because they're kind of led by this uber mad scientist who's been inventing crap for boats for years. And yes, it's simple. It's just a two-part pole that twists together, and you stick it in the ground, and you have a rope tied to that to the back of your chair, and you just find where you want to go based on the wind, and you just lock yourself in. Again, that's convenient to me because I don't fish in anything freshwater any deeper than 8-10 feet. So it's kind of convenient. I'm not a big go out in the middle of the ocean and I'm not a big middle of the lake and jig up walleye kind of guy. So lots going on. You can really set your thing up, and as I said earlier in the interview, you know, when you become an enthusiast, there's a lot to get enthusiastic about, especially if you got a good credit card.
That's lots right. So, yeah, you could add on a lot. I mean, I guess, and one thing you probably don't add to it is like going back to Stillwater, like do you see like a trolling motor? Is that something that's on kayaks?
So Torquedo came up with a trolling motor for kayaks, and I have these huge guns. You should see them; they're massive. So
We'll put a picture in the show notes of you with the flexing, so we can take a look.
So they have built trolling motors that actually hook in really nicely to the. You know, it started off. We actually there's people do it yourselfing little plates they put on. They screw it into the back of their kayak so they can put these trolling motors on them. So we have both little motors. Torquedo has these little motors that go under the back of your boat. Now with the bigger decked boats, people are using full-on trolling motors. And there's a manufacturer, they've got it's called the Sportsman Pilot, which is got a trolling motor sitting right in the middle of your deck instead of a pedal drive or a paddle drive. It's all powered by a trolling motor. I think it's trying to find its way. I don't think it quite has yet. Motors are being used more and more. I believe in kayaking 50% because of fitness. You know, I'm a strong advocate of motion is lotion, and it cures whatever ails you if you're out and you're fit and you're paddling around. And there are people out there that can't get across big stretches of water. And the other thing with trolling motors and the little Torquedo motors is a lot to do with accessibility. You know, we do a lot of work with Heroes on the Water, which is a great organization of wounded vets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some people that don't have the luxury of being able to paddle or pedal out there. So it comes into play as well. In fact, to a level that a lot of tournaments are now accepting motors to accommodate accessibility. So there you go.
There you go. No, there's a ton, obviously, like always, there's a lot of information here. We can't dig into it all. And I mean, you guys, when you look at your site, you're like, oh my gosh, I mean, we're not even going to talk about whitewater kayaking, which, you know, I haven't done a lot of that. I had some buddies back in the day that were hardcore. In fact, I think they had probably your kayaks, right? I think that's the first time I probably saw a Jackson kayak was like back then. And they were, you know, they had creek boats and they had play boats. And I mean, you guys, I'm sure, have all that covered. You got recreation.
Yeah, so it's funny that one of my first experiences with an unpressured body of water. Now, I'm in the luxury of being up in Canada. We have seasons and all that kind of stuff to protect spawn, and so we have a lot of water here. You know, if you ever Google Earth Canada, you know, and click on the satellite image, you'll see that we got more water than land, basically. And so we have a lot of unpressured water, but the real unpressured water that I first experienced was on the Ottawa River, and between the first two rapids. So we have a big rafting river here up in the Ottawa, and there's a big rapid, and in between that first big rapid and the second big rapid is probably a 40-minute paddle. And in there, there's waterways and hidden lakes and all these things that I've never seen a lure ever. And the only way you can get there back in the day, until we discovered this little secret put in, was by whitewater kayak. So I would take a break apart fly rod, stuff it into my little tiny 7-foot whitewater kayak, run the big stuff, get into a section and fish out of the stupid thing. We have a boat called the Traverse now that I use, and it's got a gear track right in the front. So I just fly fish out of that, but it's nice to run, you know, class 3, class 4 stuff and get to places like a lot of these rivers, you know, in between rapids, the smallmouth are everywhere. If you're lucky enough to run a river with trout in it, they're everywhere, you know, and they don't get pressured because no one can get there. So it's a really, for fly fishing, you know, getting into whitewater, not just for the thrill of it. You can have a safe lifestyle in whitewater in most of the rivers that you're running. Most of them aren't extreme that you see on TV, and some of our guys do. Most of whitewater is a nice, fluffy, you know, wave train down river. And then you get to these big, huge calm areas that are stocked with fish. You know, Caney Fort, or the Calf Killer River in Tennessee, is right next to our factory. And we run the rapids there, and I catch, you know, 40, 50 inch muskie. On the fly, completely unpressured. See them.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a good I mean, again, there's a little bit of overwhelm here because it's like, okay, what is the best boat? Because I think of that back to that Yupik, right? I mean, that one you could take through some whitewater, but like, what level can't you? I mean, like, are we talking riffles? Or are we talking actually a rapid?
Yeah, so there's a lot of talk, obviously, in whitewater about class 1 to class 6 and that stuff. The reality is it's more about the features on the river. You can run, you know, if you're willing to swim, you can run big water in these boats. You might fall out and flip, but if you got everything tied down, you just swim back up to it and flip her back over and get back in as long as your gear's secure, which is easy to do. You know, but if there's a lot of rock, that's when a longer boat really kind of sucks. You know, you're trying to maneuver around a rock and you've got a 13-foot boat. It's kind of like those rivers, you're kind of limited to what canoes can do.
Yeah, you're more like a canoe.
Exactly.
Which canoes can actually, I mean, well, canoes are different, but I mean, canoes, I mean, right, go back to Deliverance. You remember that movie back in the old days?
Nope, don't know what you're talking about.
No, you don't know, never heard of anything. Well, Deliverance is, you know, it's a classic movie, but I mean, those are whitewater, right? I mean, there are whitewater canoes, but.
Sure.
And those are long. So I guess you set things up and you go with it, but I don't know. I guess for me, I've always looked at those little tiny kayaks, right? And they're good for lots of things. Like you said, if you want to go through whitewater, they're awesome. But for me, I think like more of this Yupik or a bigger boat where I can kind of lay out and relax, but then I can go through a little bit of whitewater. I think that's more my style. I guess I'm being selfish here thinking about what I would want, because then, you know, like you said, you could take it out. You could stand up on a lake and fish. You could potentially take it to the ocean. I don't know. I guess I'm thinking, what's that one all-around boat, and maybe something more like a 13-foot Yupik, or is there something between the Yupik and, say, that really super whitewater kayak?
We do have a Kusa, which is a little bit shorter and a little bit more maneuverable.
Is that the Kusa HD?
The Kusa HD is a great whitewater boat. It is more maneuverable. It's got more cover and stuff like that. We're For this is a personal choice. That would be my second choice. Yupik is now easily my first choice, just because, like you said, you know, and the price point. You know, the CUSA HD has got a lot more bells and whistles on it. So, you know, especially if you're just getting into kayaking, and you know, you probably want to try something like a Yupik or a Stax, which is shorter and smaller. So, the Stax is a little bit lighter than the Yupik. It's smaller, more maneuverable, a lot more friendly to just, you know, mucking about on a lake, that kind of thing. You know, it's half wreck boat, half fishing boat. So if you don't like the fishing, you can get onto it and just cruise in the sun kind of thing. So that, you know, there's many ways to skin the first time in a boat cat. But I'd say if you really want to try all different waterways, and you're blessed to live in an area like I do, where there's some moving water, some big lakes and some small lakes, the Yupik's a great, Yupik is a great choice for sure. And then you just, as you get more and more in tuned with how you want to fish out of a kayak, then you can upgrade. You know, if pedal drive is the way you want to go, because you don't necessarily want to do the small bodies of water, you want to do the big bodies of water, or maybe go offshore because you're in Delaware region and you can do offshore and inshore and lakes. So it's just, you know, it's definitely a good starting point for sure.
Yeah, we're talking here obviously focusing on Jackson because it makes sense. You know, I'm just trying to get a feel for, you know, somebody new again, what do these things look like, and I'm getting a good picture. I mean, like, for example, this CUSA HD, you know, it looks like it has a little more storage, but maybe isn't as good standing, right? Maybe it's not, doesn't have the flat platform. So can you stand up in that one?
Yeah, it's less platform. It's actually a very standable boat. It's probably one of our more stable boats. It's just designed so that you can maneuver it a lot faster. So you can turn on a dime. That's why we took that hull and we created the CUSA FD, a pedal drive from it, because it, you know, that CUSA FD is a way for you to get into different kind of waterways, even bigger waters. Like I said earlier, it's great offshore too. But have the stability and the storage. You know, the internal storage is a big thing. You know, a lot of people like putting stuff into inside the boat versus putting it in dry bags. Again, I come from a traditional kayaking world where it's just dry bags. You know, like, why would I need a cover when I just shove it in a dry bag?
Yeah, you know, dry bags are great. We had a couple episodes. I had the NRS. You know, we had them on and talked about which is an amazing history of that company as well. And yeah, I mean, they just, you got it all. You got an NRS strap, you got a Bill's bag, you know, or whatever bag, you're good to go. Yeah. Tie it down, and you could, pretty, like you said, you could dump the boat and just swim next to it if you needed to.
Yeah, so I'm starting to work with them. We just kind of agreed on a kind of an ambassadorship.
Oh, nice.
But a couple months ago, mostly because of the multi-day stuff that I do, tying, you know, I just didn't have the right dry bag, so I reached out to them, and I'm like, you know, do you have any in stock? Because that's been the question of the year, right? Do you have any in stock? You know, I'm doing a couple of multi-day trips this year, and David Fish from NRS Fishing was generous enough to send me a few bags. I do a TV show with my buddy Ken Whiting from Heliconia Press, called Facing Waves, and we're running the Des Moines River, which is a multi-day river. And I just finished doing a shoot with them last summer. We ran the Petawal River, and it's exactly what, in fact, both of those boats, the CUSA HD and the Yupik, are in that video. It's on the Go Paddle YouTube channel.
Oh, okay.
And it's a multi-day down a Boulder Garden River for muskie.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much any challenge you can throw at a kayak. That was, they even got me pinned on a rock. I had to bail out the front of it.
And which boat was that you're using?
That was in the Yupik. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of those rivers where, so they do have whitewater kayaks on that river, or whitewater canoe, sorry, on that river. But a lot of the rapids, they have to portage, even the whitewater canoes. Some of the shorter whitewater canoes with the ballast bags can run some of these rapids, but the kayaks were able to. So we have a little bit, because we're solo, we're a little bit shorter. You know, the prospectors are what, 16, 17 feet long. So they still have 2 feet more on us. So there you go.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that's it. So yeah. And I was, Yeah, again, James, this is always the struggle because, especially for you, we keep digging into this and you got all these cool experiences. And I think today we probably won't have time to dig into it all. So, yeah, maybe down the line we can get you back on it and dig into some of these fishing stories. I'm not sure. I mentioned the Bill Park. Did you hear, did you know that story of the founder of that company?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's I'll put a link to the show notes to that episode, but we talked about it. It's really powerful. They, you know, basically, you know, I think it was like $150 million company, and he retired. And instead of, you know, instead of selling, right, just taking his 150 and taking off, he gave it back to, he gave it to his employees.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the guy that I had on, you know, he talked about it. It was pretty powerful because he was like, man, I mean, it's a very cool story. So that's NRS, and that makes sense because anybody that knows NRS knows their service is like second to none as well.
Yep.
So, awesome. So cool. Well, let's see. So we're doing pretty good here. I feel like if I came in right now, I'd probably just go for, I've got a couple boats in mind. Anything else we want to toss out there? So somebody, again, they're new to it. Maybe they have a boat, maybe they have a little raft or a pontoon boat or something they've been using. They're thinking like, okay, what else do I need to know to get into a kayak? Anything else you want to throw out there?
Not really. Again, it's the kayak gets you to a little bit more intimate with the water. And as you do that, you kind of get more and more comfortable with the different aspects of kayaking, what you can and can't do. You know, there are limitations to kayak fishing, obviously, as there are lots of pluses. It's like any kind of boating, it's any kind of fishing or any kind of enthusiast sport. And really, it's just, you know, you're going to go through a series of just trying it out. And that's always going to be my advice to anybody, to make sure that it's fitting what you do and what you want to do on the water versus trying to round hole square peg it and adapting to what it's telling you to do. There's a lot of fishing kayaks out there that are set up a certain way. And if that's not where your rod is, usually it's not going to feel comfortable. You know, so, you know, you're looking for things like gear tracks, you know, we mentioned earlier, look for it's actually becoming more and more popular, that blank slate, you know, that open canvas for you to paint your own picture as an angler and a kayaker. And then for me, you know, this is just me being an enthusiast about kayaking in general. The best way to describe, you know, this new evolution of these anglers becoming kayakers is their eyes and their minds are being open to incredible different fisheries. You know, when we do the bass boat thing, or if we do the cottage tinny, we call them tinnies, I guess you call them John boats in the US, but you know, if you do that thing, you're kind of relegated to certain, you know, your tried and true rivers and lakes. These are where you always go. You know, every once in a while you foray off to this, you know, other lake, where Uncle John's cottage is, you know. But in a kayak, you know, you start driving down the road, you're going down the road and you start looking at rivers going underneath the road. You start looking at these little ponds that you've never, it's got a weed bed in there, man. I've never been there. You start kind of opening your eyes to things that are way more accessible to you than ever before. And especially if you're fly fishing, I'd like to talk about fly fishing off of a kayak a little bit. Especially when you're fly fishing, you've got such a simplistic life ahead of you when it comes to fishing out of a kayak. You're not relegated to a specific shoreline. You can float a lot of rivers. You're not doing the one eddy thing. You know, you're not hiking for 7 miles to get to that one little pool. You float past all of the pools, you know, which is kind of annoying to other fly fishermen. But, you know, you can put the boat on top of a car and get into, you know, I driving across to Newfoundland, we used to go by all these incredible ponds. It's kind of like marshlands and these ponds everywhere. That's where the moose hang out. And you can pull, you know, I fish from the shore, but I knew if I can get to that far shore, I can get away from where everybody's been fishing. So there's, you know, I think kayak angling opens up, you know, so many different waterways. And I think, you know, once you start going down that path of having your mind expanded to different types of places to go, then all of a sudden you're getting into different types of fisheries. And I can only, you know, speak for myself, you know, especially with the help of some really good friends, I've gotten to some absolutely incredible places on a kayak to fish, mostly because I can ship them pretty easily and fly them out there and get there and find one there. So,
yep. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, I think that's the advantage. One big advantage is that, yeah, you can take these things wherever, you know, you can hike them in. And I guess there are some, you know, rafts, there's some smaller boats, there's these little things out there which would probably do a similar thing, but there's probably some advantages of the kayak over those and vice versa, I'm sure, if we dug into that. I did want to, before we get out here, I want to touch on one thing, because I've got a couple of kids, and we were just out, you know, at the bay. We live, you know, near the ocean, and we were out in the bay, and we had the alligator boat, you know, we were just kind of messing around. But we were talking about that. We were like, man, it would be nice to have a hard kayak for the kids. So can you just talk, what would you recommend? So again, back to the thing, you know, we don't have a kayak, we know nothing about it. What does somebody need to know about a kid kayak?
Well, kids, there's a whole bunch going on with when you're bringing kids into waterways. First of all, it's got to be easy. You know, it's like fishing. You never bring them, you never take a kid musky fishing for the first time. You know, you got to find that little dock and you find a sunfish and you get them hooked that way. So it's the same thing with every enthusiast sport. You got to get them enthusiastic about it. So, I mean, that's Jackson started with kids' boats. So we've always had a line of kids' boats. We have a boat that we print every once in a while called the Skipper. That's really small, but the Stacks now is a nice small boat for kids. So they need to be able to drag it to the shore. They want to be independent, so let them be able to drag it to the shore and get into the boat. If they can set it up with their little Scooby-Doo fishing rod on their own, that's great. You know, and then there's the paddling. You want to make sure it goes straight. God forbid you get a, you know, in whitewater, that's the challenge, because our whitewater boats don't go straight. You know, they go in circles. They're meant to be maneuverable. So, as instructors in whitewater, we kind of keep in mind that we got to get the kids past the whole idea of flipping over, but B, the idea that the boat's not supposed to go straight. So it's the same thing with fishing kayaks and recreational kayaks. You know, you get them in a boat that's not comfortable, that's not easy to paddle, that's not easy to dive off of and get into. That's a real big deal, right? You want that stable platform. That's where that, you know, the Stacks and other boats like it. They're, you know, they have a nice stable platform. The kids can just use it as a floating dock and they can swim wherever they want to go. So, that's the kind of thing that they're going to look for. You know, you're giving them freedom, right? You're giving them their own boat. Having your own kayak is not sitting on a tinny with your daddy driving. It's, you get to manage your own world. And that's kind of a big deal for kids. And you can see it in the faces when they like, this is my boat. I get to do this on my own. Yeah, why are there two blades in this paddle? You know, but it's a cool kayaking is actually really, really good for getting a kid enthusiast in the outdoor world for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, those are great tips, and I think I love the fact that like the dock, think of it that way. They can go follow, you know, stay with you, but then they can just play. And like it would have been great to have that the Stacks. I guess it's STAXX. Because they could have been out in the bay and just kind of hopped off and swam and then hopped back up on it, right, and laid out or just messed around, right?
Yeah, well, we actually originally built the Stacks for its stackability, you know. So a lot of the liveries are kind of the same, and that's where a lot of people get into kayaking. They go with their friends, they go rent a kayak and they paddle styles, float down some river. And liveries have a challenge when they have, you know, 400 kayaks. They need to stack, be able to store them. So these boats stack. And then we just started realizing, and all of a sudden families started buying them, you know, and we have fishing kits for them and stuff like that. And of course, with the tracks, you can get whatever accessory you want. You know, if someone wants to sit there and watch their iPad, they can. If someone wants to go fishing, they can. If someone wants to use it as a dock and go swimming, they can. And then, you know, they're not expensive, so the families, you know, the family can have three or four of them, and they just stack under the cottage.
All right,
kind of things.
Gotcha. Yeah, so you can just be ready to go. Okay. And you had, you know, there's a few things I think we'll leave for next time, James. But you know, one of them you mentioned the muskie, which is always, I mean, not probably one of the harder species to catch. And you just quickly, I know you won a muskie tournament, right? But sometime back in the day, could you talk about? First of all, is that true? And then could you talk about how that all went together?
That was kind of an interesting story. When we first did our fishing kayak, the Coosa, we had a local tournament. Come to us and say, would you be willing to donate a kayak? We made the news, you know, in the area. And the event was being held on the Caney Fork series of rivers, all the tributaries to the Caney Fork. And it was a muskie. It was the inaugural World Muskie Fly Fishing Championship. And I hadn't fished with a fly, man, probably in about 15 years at the time. And I went to the factory and I heard about this and they said, well, we'll give you two spots in the tournament. And I just happened to be there that weekend. You know, I go down four times a year and I just happened to be there that weekend. I'm like, okay, well, might as well float and catch some fish. And I do musky fish in that river system. So when we got there, you know, there's probably 200 different fly anglers from all over, mostly the US. There's a couple of Europeans there actually. Most of them had the big dories, a couple of them had kind of converted bass boats. So they were going to stick, but a lot of them looked like they were going to stick with the bigger tributaries and the main Caney Fork. And I knew enough that the fish weren't there. they weren't going to be on big water. It was in May and they were going to be up the tributaries, you know, up on the Calfkiller. I mentioned that boat, that river earlier. So, you know, I kind of registered, hopped in my kayak and I caught a few muskie and won the tournament, but I fished with a 5-weight. It's the only fly rod I could find.
Oh, cool. You fished with a 5-weight and you landed, yeah. Like, what was the biggest muskie you landed on that?
I think it was 42.
Wow.
45. Yeah. Yeah. It's all about controlling the drag really. You know, it's, I had the right fluorocarbon, I had flies tied to me by the Vermont fly guys. It just happened to be a team member who knew someone. I heard that I was going to do this tournament. So they sent me this little bag of musky flies. They're like pike flies on crack. And yeah, it was fun.
Do you have, I'm just curious, it sounds like you've been out there. Do you have a lodge out there, like a fishing lodge that you've been to that you've loved, or a destination?
So many. You know, my first international fishing trip was to Sweden. We went to Karlskrona. And we have a good friend who runs this company called Pike Strike. And so they're all northern pike. Same family anyway. They look identical to our Canadian pike. And if you trace a line across to Sweden from Canada, you'll see there's probably some natural, but they're probably the same species. But they're in the Baltic Sea, and with a little bit of salt in their livelihood, these are fast. They fight hard, and they're crazy cool. But that whole place was epic. And most of them fly fish up there, so they have a Pike Strike as a beautiful fly fishing kind of lodge system. He's got a whole bunch of locations, actually, camps and cabins, and you name it. So that was good. Very very affordable. Nobody goes there. Super unpressured. It's great. And then, of course, my new favorite is Los Buzos in Panama. We went there and did a shoot for both Jackson and the Jim Salmon's kayak fishing show. And you know, you're half an hour paddle at most, and you're into some massive rooster fish. And I started jigging up for big broomtail grouper. But there's like every species, Quiberas, you know, it's out there. And I got hooked on that place. I can't wait to go back.
And how do you spell that? Los
Losbuzos.
Yeah. Oh, cool. All right. Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So it sounds like you've got a pretty, obviously pretty cool gig there. And you put in your time so you're able to do some traveling and stuff like that. Well, James, there's a bunch I'm leaving on the table. One of them was the, I think, is it called the Angler 360?
Yep.
Yeah. So there's this big, this really cool, different looking boat, which, you know, again, do you want to give a one word response to that, or anything we should know about that one?
If you don't like the word kayak, this boat's for you. You know, so there's a big part of the marketplace that's like, I'm not going to get into a kayak. And, you know, you got big guys who are 6'5", you know, and they're a little worried about stability. The word kayak itself is sometimes daunting. This is a boat that we built. It's a pontoon, two pontoon boat that it's a pedal drive boat that basically, you know, gives you a little bit of a bridge between the bass boat and the kayak. And it's pretty popular. Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah, it looks like something where you could set a couple of lawn chairs on it. Yep. And hang out there. Yep. drinking some beers.
Man's best friend.
Yeah, there you go. And one here before we just get out here. I'm not. Do you listen to podcasts at all? Do you have a favorite podcast? It could be fishing or other.
Yeah, you know, I do a lot of driving, so I listen to a lot of the serious marketing Apple podcasts. But when I want to entertain myself, there's a show called Serial that I listen to, and it's pretty entertaining. A lot of times I need to, I'm not a serious guy, so I try to think I don't need that much self-help, so I don't do a lot of that kind of stuff. But I'll listen to a lot of fishing podcasts for sure. There's a whole bunch of them, the kayak fishing world especially, that are starting to come. Not as much as, you know, traditional fishing and hunting. Actually, hunting's crazy. I don't hunt, but when I went to a couple of shows with our coolers, I noticed podcast world is huge there. It's just starting in kayak fishing, really.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, you guys... Seems like, yeah, there's that whole hunting side too, which would be, I'm sure, a lot of potential as well. So, okay, well, I guess we'll leave it there. And yeah, anything new you want to give a shout out the next year that is coming up with you know, you guys or personally or the business?
Lots of changes. We went through a huge evolution in the last 2 years in regards to Jackson Kayak. We have a kind of a movement right now that's kind of bringing us back to the grassroots of why we started Jackson Kayak in the first place. It's a movement called We Are Jackson Kayak. And, definitely keep an eye out for that hashtag, you know, subscribe to all our channels and stuff like that. And 2022 boats are going to start coming out and being marketed in, I say, August, September. And there's a couple fishing wise that are going to change the world, I think. So there.
Nice. Nice. All right, James, we'll put a jacksonkayak.com. I'll put a link there in the show notes and send everybody that way. And yeah, I think it's obvious there's a good lots of benefits to hitting up on a kayak. So hopefully we'll send some people your way. And yeah, looking forward to keeping in touch with you.
Yeah. Get into boating, everybody.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links, everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/248. Please leave a 5-star review if you get a chance and if you've been enjoying this podcast. These reviews help other anglers and people out there find the show, join the community, and stick with fly fishing in the long term. That is the plan. That is the plan to keep people going. So hope you are enjoying the content. If you are enjoying, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me via email, dave@wetflyswing.com, or on social. Just let me know. I always love, sometimes I'm sitting here recording these, doing the work, and I'm not always, hearing what I do hear from a lot of people, but I'd love to hear from you if you haven't spoke up and said hi. This also helps me make a connection and help to guide the content of this podcast. That's a big part of this, is that a lot of the episodes have actually come from listeners. So if you have a topic that you're interested in, something maybe we haven't covered, we've got a lot in the back catalog, but there's always a new episode, a new topic, a new guest that we can dig into. So please check back with me. Thanks in advance if you've done that over the years. And I want to thank you for listening today and for all the support. Hope to maybe catch you on the river or online or on the water real soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.